From Gimlet Media, this is Undone. I'm Pat Walters. Today, we're talking about a thing a lot of us have done, even though sometimes it drives us crazy.
It usually takes, like, two messages for someone to ask you for a naked photo or for your bra size.
This is Andrea Salenzi talking about online dating. She talks about it a lot, mostly on this podcast she has called Why Oh Why. Andrea started using dating apps when she lived in Kansas City, but she wasn't meeting anybody she really liked there, so she decided to move.
A big part of why I left Kansas City was thinking that I'd have more options here in New York.
But when she got here and started checking out guys' profiles,
everyone seems to be posing in this identical Game of Thrones chair. It's a promotional item for the television show. It tours the country.
The apps just kept giving her duds.
It's just, I don't find you sexy sitting in a promotional throne.
And even when the app gave her a guy who looked great on the screen,
he speaks Esperanto.
It's this kind of dorky universal language. This was a plus for Andrea. But when she met him in person, she says she could just tell.
For not a match. And you know that in 5 seconds. You know that the moment you make real-world eye contact with someone, if it's, like, there or it's not.
Andrea has been online dating for years now. She's had a few relationships. One got pretty serious. But she still hasn't found that person to share her life with. And she wants to. She says she's 31 and she wants to start a family. And it feels like the dating apps should have solved this for her by now. Because we live in this moment in history when computers seem capable of finding basically everything we want.
If you have a problem which is like, I'm hungry, you can just open up Seamless and then food arrives. If you have a problem that's like, I need a bed frame, you can open up some apps, do some online shopping, find a new bed frame, get it delivered, no problem. But I have this problem, which is I am looking for someone to love. If I wanted to, I could fill an entire page of my phone with dating apps. But I don't think that that's made dating better. I actually think it might be getting worse.
We all know people who've met online, fallen in love, and gotten married. But we also all know people like Andrea, who want that, but are still alone. So why isn't online dating better at finding you your person? This episode, we're digging into this question by going way back to the roots of online dating, which go back a lot further than I thought they did. Back to the 1960s, before there was even an internet, when computers were still new and mysterious, and our hope that they could find you love hadn't yet been crushed by dudes asking you for your bra size.
Well, hopefully we can remember that far back 50 years ago.
This is Anita Grimes. You can think of her as Andrea of the 1960s. Our producer, Emmanuel Berry, found Anita and is going to help tell this story from here.
Anita was among the first people to ever use a computer to date. In the summer of 1966, Anita was a senior English major at Mount St. Mary's College, an all-girls school in Los Angeles, and she wanted to meet someone. In those days, a woman like Anita didn't have a lot of options. She couldn't meet a man in class. Remember, all-girls school. And her main activity outside of school was dancing, and she wasn't meeting any men there. So
the only time I would meet guys would be a mixer.
A mixer was kind of like a high school dance, but for college students. There's a punch bowl, maybe a live music act, and a dance floor.
And usually what would happen, we would enter and the women would stand around and we would wait to be asked to dance.
So the girls would stand on one side of the room, the boys on the other, and Anita would just wait for some dude to come up to her.
And then there would be the awkward introduction.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you want to dance?
Sure.
What's your major? Turns out, it's awkward.
I don't think anyone particularly enjoyed that experience.
A handful of times, Anita went on a date with a guy she'd met at a mixer.
But they weren't great. By senior year, Anita felt stuck.
And this is where computers come in.
One of Anita's classmates had told her about this new dating service called Operation Match. So in the spring of 1966, Anita ends up with this booklet. On the first page, in big, bold letters, it says, "You're one in a million. No one else is quite like you." Below that, "Operation Match is a computer matching project, the only one of its kind." Which was intriguing to Anita, because computers were still really new in the 60s.
Most people didn't really know what a computer was.
This is Marie Hicks. She's a professor who studies the history of computers at the Illinois Institute of Technology. She says by the 60s, computers had been around for a little while, but they were mainly used by the military. Regular people hardly knew anything about them.
They heard the term computer and they maybe had a very vague idea of maybe what a mainframe looked like, but they didn't really know how they worked.
Describe at the time what you knew about computers.
Not much. I remember the home ec lab had this wonderful new device, a microwave.
But even though Anita knew nothing about computers, Operation Match sounded exciting, like this secret shortcut around those terrible mixers. So she decided to try it.
First step was to fill out this questionnaire, around 100 questions about herself and her ideal person. The idea was the computer would then match her answers to other people's answers to find the perfect date.
Do you like remember where you were when you filled it out?
I imagine I did it in my bedroom.
So she starts answering these questions, and we've got a copy of this survey right here. And it starts out pretty straightforward. It asks you about your sex, race, religion. There's this big list of interests you can check, so things like swimming or the German language or bowling.
There aren't any pictures, obviously, but there is a place to rate your own attractiveness.
And there are these weird situational questions, like, what would you do if your roommate set you up on a blind date and she was ugly? Or what would you do if you came across an unfinished crossword puzzle?
Anita says she doesn't remember how she answered that question, or most of them. It was 50 years ago.
But she does know she answered all of them.
I think I approached it with a fairly serious attitude and kind of maybe a relief that, gee, you know, I'm maybe going to be matched up with somebody who shares some of my preferences, some of my ideas, some of my interests.
The next morning, Anita mailed it off to Operation Match along with the $3 fee. And then she waited.
A couple days later, Anita's envelope made it to Operation Match in Boston. The company had only been in business for a year and was started by a few guys who were also frustrated with the way dating worked in the 1960s.
It seemed like a better way, in theory, than going to a mixer. And if it worked, it could be a tremendous thing.
This is one of the founders, a Harvard student named Jeff Tarr. He got the idea to use the computer because of this summer job he'd had.
I had worked a couple of summers for this insurance actuary company, and they had these IBM machines.
Early computers. And when Jeff got back to school, he thought, why not use the computer for dating? But remember, no one even owned a computer in those days. They were these huge things the size of a room. So if you wanted to use one, you had to rent time on it.
I had $450.
So he and his friends called up IBM in Boston.
And they said, look, if you can use our service at, say, 3 o'clock Sunday morning, it's cost you very little.
So they started Operation Match. They made these questionnaires, like the one Anita would eventually fill out, put them up all over campus. And as they came in, they started sorting matches at IBM in the middle of the night. And this new thing was a hit right away at colleges around Boston.
They loved it. They loved it.
At first, like any startup, they didn't really have any money to pay employees.
They worked 8 hours. I gave them 8 dates.
But pretty soon they were able to start paying people in money, not women's phone numbers, because Operation Match took off. They got written up in newspapers and major magazines with headlines like Harvard Men Replacing Cupid with Computer. Jeff appeared on all the major television networks. He was even on Johnny Carson.
Jeff told one interviewer, quote, "A computer can find the right date for a person in a split second when it might take him or her 3 years to do it alone." Some of the articles about Operation Match made it seem like all you had to do was fill out a questionnaire, feed it into a computer, and out popped a sheet of paper with your soulmate's name and phone number on it. In that first year, Operation Match spread across the country. And by the winter of 1966, they'd gotten close to 100,000 responses.
And most people paid with cash. So we had all this cash coming in.
Thousands of ones.
Well, we had some $2 bills. Hopefully we didn't have many $3 bills.
Jeff got so busy, he stopped going to class.
We thought we would work at most 10 hours a week. It took 10 hours a day.
But this work wasn't really work. Jeff says they'd go on these business trips to women's colleges.
And each day, I had 8 dates through Operation Match, every hour on the hour. And they weren't really dates. They were me, quote, working on my thesis.
So this was research.
In theory, that's what it was.
So this is what Operation Match looked like back in 1966 when Anita sent in her questionnaire. Her answers were coded onto a punch card, which looked like a Scantron with holes in it, and fed into a computer. The computer then matched it up with several guys, and a list of their names and numbers got mailed off to Anita.
I was kind of looking forward to seeing who I would get on my list.
So Anita gets this list in the mail. She opens it, sees the names, and waits. Because just like at the mixers, girls cannot make the first move.
It was pretty much unheard of for a female to call a male.
While Anita waited, just across town, one of the boys on her list was opening his envelope.
There were those strips on the sides of the paper that had the holes in them. And that was kind of verification. Whoa, this came from a computer, you know. And so it was...
Like this is legit.
Yeah, this is legit. This is the real deal.
This is Michael Casey. In 1966, he was a graduate student at an all-boys school called Loyola University. And like Anita, he'd been trying to meet people at mixers, and it wasn't working out.
How did it feel to go to these mixers and not really find anyone?
Bad. You felt bad. You feel like you had not risen to the occasion of the social test.
He kind of doubted Operation Match would even work for him.
I was opening the envelope. I expected it to say, "We can't find anybody. We would be so bold or so unkind as to match you with."
But here was this list, and on it was the name Anita Grimes. So he called her up, and she invited him to come meet her after dance practice.
And I don't know that I'd ever been that near, or certainly not in a dance studio. So that was a little bit worrisome to me.
It actually terrified him.
I thought, oh, Lord, she's going to be in great shape.
And Michael was not.
I was already at 23 becoming a person of some girth.
So to prepare for the date.
You know, I ain't so sure I want to say this part.
He was a little embarrassed to tell us what he did.
Is this a national audience?
It goes online.
Oh, sure. It just goes on. Fine. Well, you know, what the heck? I found a corset, a male corset, that I put on because it squeezed my gut in.
So you mean like Orson Welles in the Jane Eyre movie-esque? Is that what we're talking?
That may be a good comparison.
So Michael suits up in his corset and a corduroy jacket and goes to meet Anita at her dance practice. When he gets there, she's still rehearsing.
And it was one of those slithery modern dances, you know, where they're all up and down each other. And I'm saying, I don't know about this.
He's thinking, why would the computer even set me up with this person? But he was also a little excited. So he waits it out. And after the rehearsal, Anita and Michael go out on their first date.
We went to a coffee shop, Tiny Nailers.
Anita ordered Jell-O. Michael thinks he had a coffee.
I started to talk about a paper I was working on, and it was Hopkins and Carlyle.
And unlike me, Michael...
He knew who those people were, and we were able to talk about ideas.
Death and desire, love and longing, and all that stuff that we English teachers just can't give up.
Turned out they did have something in common. They were both English majors. And as the date went on, they learned they were both Catholic, family was really important to them, and Michael gradually realized that he really liked the fact that Anita was a dancer. It was exciting to meet someone different. While Michael was driving home from that first date,
I got off at the wrong exit, and I didn't realize until I had got off the freeway, and then I was on a surface street, and I realized, where am I? is both an exhilarating feeling, but also an oddly frightening one, that this may be the real deal.
Anita felt the same way.
This was different.
And pretty soon after that first Operation Match date,
the proposal was you getting down on one knee and begging me to marry you, right? Wasn't that it?
Michael took Anita to one of her favorite spots.
I was super nervous.
The Santa Monica Pier.
I did say yes.
7 months after Operation Match paired them up, they got married.
And 50 years later, they're still together.
It's taken us 50 years to get bored with each other.
So you're just now getting bored.
Maybe it only took 40. I don't know.
And this is pretty amazing. This super early computer matched up two people who probably never would have met each other. Anita, a dancer. Michael, a man who'd never set foot in a dance studio. And they ended up being perfect for each other. We talked to a bunch of other couples who also met on Operation Match, fell in love, and got married. So how did we get from there to where we are now?
There's a picture I saw last night of a guy riding an ostrich, and it's like, how much did you pay to have to ride that ostrich?
After the break, what happened in the decades between Operation Match and today? So, before the break, we learned about this company called Operation Match that was sort of a precursor to online dating, and about this adorable couple it matched up, these two English nerds who fell in love and have been married for 50 years now.
You'd think with success stories like Michael and Anita, Operation Match would have kept growing after the 60s and become the foundation of online dating, but it didn't. The founders didn't think running a computer dating startup was a serious career choice. Different times. When they graduated, they sold it. Jeff Tarr again.
We sold it for very little money, and I think the business kind of died quietly.
And after Operation Match died, nothing really happened in the world of dating technology for, like, a decade, until the late 1970s, when this happened.
I like to wear bright socks, and I'm an avid Cleveland Browns fan.
I'm interested in most phases of data processing.
Life is a playground, and I want somebody to play with.
This is video dating.
Hi, I'm Maurice. I'm an executive by day and a wild man by night.
The way it worked was you basically just went to an office in a strip mall and watched these videos of weird dudes introducing themselves. At least, all I could find were dudes.
One of my favorite foods is pizza.
I'm a 25-year subscriber to both Playboy and The New Yorker magazine.
I'm looking for the goddess. Are you the goddess?
The strange thing, besides everything they just said, is that video dating got really big. By 1986, the largest video dating company, which was called Great Expectations, had 40,000 members and was bringing in millions of dollars. But they weren't matching people. So it's not exactly building off the idea Operation Match had introduced.
That idea didn't get picked up again until about 15 years ago with this.
I was skeptical about anything that was on an internet.
With eHarmony, you know, they bring the matches to you.
When you're answering those questions, you're thinking about who and what you really are.
eHarmony was sort of the first Operation Match for the internet era. It had a survey with hundreds of questions that it ran through a computer algorithm to match you up with your perfect person.
Your profile, they have somebody else's profile, and they match you.
At eHarmony, we use a scientific system to help you find someone who's looking for someone like you.
We're a real couple.
And the site was a massive hit. By 2003, it had 3 million users, and other sites followed their lead. Match.com, which started in 1995 as sort of a personal ad site, created a new questionnaire-based site in 2005. And OkCupid launched with a matching survey hundreds of questions long.
All of these sites built on what Operation Match had started, a questionnaire-based matching system that runs on an algorithm on a computer. But now, with way more powerful computers than Operation Match had in the 60s, tons more data, and the internet. These sites were like Operation Match on steroids. And this is when the idea that a computer algorithm could match you up with your soulmate really went mainstream.
eHarmony pushed this the hardest. In 2006, they put out a press release saying their matches had led to 16,000 marriages that year. That's 43 marriages a day. This was their main selling point. eHarmony will use the computer to find you your soulmate.
But a few years ago, a big research paper came out saying there's no scientific evidence computers can do that. that basically there's no proof these Operation Match-style sites actually match up people who are likely to fall in love and work well in a relationship together. And when you ask a creator of one of today's biggest dating sites about this, he says, yeah, obviously.
There's no pretense among the founders or wherever that, like, nobody thinks it's like real compatibility. We're just trying to find the person that is the best odds of maybe you having a conversation with.
This is Christian Rutter, former president and one of the founders of OkCupid, which, like Operation Match, was also founded by four guys at Harvard. And he says OkCupid and most dating sites now aren't trying to predict who you're going to fall in love with. They're just trying to get you out on dates. He says you can answer thousands of questions about yourself, and the computer still wouldn't really know you completely.
The entire person is never going to be on a dating site. We're going to not ask things that are important to you. We're never going to know what your sense of humor is like. You know, there's just like a million things that really matter to people that's not even going to be entered into this supposed algorithm, right? So like, how powerful could it ever possibly be?
The point is, he says, the only way to fall in love with somebody is in real life. These Operation Match-style dating sites like OkCupid are mostly just good at using a computer to suggest some people they think you might have a good date with.
We've got to rank the people. We've got a million people. You log on. Which one are we going to show you next?
And that does feel kind of obvious. But still, when I think back to Operation Match, to Michael and Anita and how they met and fell for each other, it feels like the computer did more than that.
But Jeff Tarr, the Operation Match founder, says they probably just got kind of lucky. Remember, this was a computer the size of a van that read paper. It just wasn't that sophisticated. It was really good at matching people up based on a handful of factors, but that's about it.
Many people, they thought they would find their husbands. We were out of business matchmakers. We weren't. We said it was a dating experience, not a mating kind of experience.
Sometimes the Operation Match questionnaire thing worked, and you ended up with an Anita and Michael situation. But a lot of other times, probably most other times, it didn't. Jeff actually got a ton of complaints. So many.
I had to change my phone number.
You really did?
Yeah.
And 50 years later, most new dating apps have completely abandoned this idea of using a questionnaire to match people. Tinder, Bumble, Grindr, they pretty much just give you a picture. They use a computer algorithm to decide which pictures they show you, and it's based on social connections and metadata and lots of other complicated stuff we're not going to get into. But in a way, Christian from OkCupid says,
I mean, we're kind of back in a digital version of being in a party or a bar and seeing someone who looks cool and going over there and talking to them with no other information.
It's kind of like being at a mixer again. We're all standing around like Michael and Anita before Operation Match, but on our phones.
Except not exactly. The mixer is huge now. The whole internet is on it. And for certain people, that kind of changed everything.
I told all my friends, set me up. and none of them came through.
This is Janet. She's 63 years old. And 3 years ago, she got divorced and just felt stuck.
Everybody at my age, and I'm talking, you know, in around 60-ish, were pretty much paired up.
Eventually, she went online, and she met this guy from the next town over who she says she never would have met in real life. Janet works a high-profile, white-collar job. He's a contractor. And they hit it off.
In a lot of ways, we're totally different, which makes you wonder, well, how do we, you know, get together? But you kind of realize that, you know, chemistry between people is not always about being the same. A lot of it has to do with how you're different.
And this is one of the great things online dating has given us. It's not just that the internet has made the mixer bigger, it's also made it so we can sort of design the mixer we want with all different kinds of people in it.
This is going to sound really cliche. but we're each other's little missing puzzle pieces.
Oh, stop it.
These are my friends, Prashanth and Steven. They met on Tinder. They've been dating for about 2 years and just moved in together. And Prashanth says if you're gay and you're just trying to meet someone in real life, it can be tricky.
You can't necessarily assume that the other person is like, you know, the same orientation. So this is like a easy way of like just having the population sorted for you. And then you work from that instead of potentially like putting yourself in like danger if, you know, somebody takes it the wrong way and lashes out.
But just because online dating lets you design the mixer you want, doesn't mean that's easy. Andrea, from the beginning of the episode, is still trying to find someone.
Let's just take, like, the whole population of New York City, and then let's, because I'm attracted to men, let's cut that into men, and now let's cut that into the age range I'm looking for, and now let's cut that into the guys who aren't partnered. Let's cut out all the guys who put topless photos on their apps. Cut out all the guys who are chugging beers on the apps. Cut out all the guys who are just, like, total players, and you can tell. And I really don't think it's that big of a pool.
Finding somebody is just hard. But when I think about how frustrating online dating can be, I think back on Anita going to those mixers before she met Michael. I think about her standing by the wall and waiting for some guy to come and talk to her. And it's the waiting that sticks with me. Just waiting and hoping something will happen. And maybe the thing Operation Match set in motion, and the thing all these dating apps give us, is that nobody really has to do that anymore. They give us the ability to do something.
I'm grateful. I'm glad I don't have to go to 1,000 parties.
Even if sometimes you kind of hate it when you're doing it.
I think I got the saddest when I started recognizing people from 2 years ago. So there's this one guy who's holding a kitten and kind of pretending to eat it, and he's still there. So just realizing, like, there are some people who will never leave these apps, and I might be one of them now.
Does it scare you?
Of course. Yeah. But I don't want to stop trying.
Undone is hosted and produced by me, Pat Walters, with Julia DeWitt and Emmanuel Berry. Our senior producer is Larissa Anderson. We are edited by Alan Burdick and Caitlin Kenny. Our intern is Isabella Kulkarni. Undone is mixed and scored by Bobby Lord. Our fact checker is Michelle Harris. Special thanks to Martin and Joan Peru, Robert and Beth Smith, Paul Eastwick, Eve Peters, Vaughn Morrill, and David Crump. Undone was conceived in collaboration with our friends at Retro Report, the documentary film series that connects iconic news events of the past to today. You can find them at retroreport.org. If you want to get in touch, follow us on Twitter at Undone Show or email us at undone@gimletmedia.com. You can subscribe to Undone on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like the show, please write us a review. It really helps. We'll have a new episode next week. See you then.
Hi, Pat.
Hey, Manuel.
So I was listening and I don't feel like we have enough video dating clips in there.
You don't think that was enough?
No, I think we definitely need more.
Maybe just a few more.
Yeah, just a few. Like,
just a few
maybe
more.
Like,
okay.
Five.
I feel like the benefit of these is it makes me feel glad that I live now and not not in 1984.
What would you say on your tape?
Oh my God. I feel like the video dating premise would like force me to become some like the creepiest version of myself.
Hi, my name's Mike, and if you're sitting there watching this tape smoking your cigarette, well, hit the fast forward button, because I don't smoke and I don't like people who do smoke.
And I do consider myself a refined valley dude.
I will cry at a commercial.
I'm not afraid to get sand on my tuxedo if you're not afraid to let the wind mess your hair up a little bit when I take the top down.
Are you that woman? Please give me a call.